This is the Brian Hayes Show on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
Here we go, without any rude interruptions this time. Attaboy, Malls. Gareth Wheeler with you. This is the Hayes Show, TSN 1050. I'm going to ask Malls and Steph behind the glass. I meant to do this yesterday, but we flushed right out of time. About courtesy at the deli counter. Or at counters with no defined lines. We're going to have to get into this in a few moments' time. Nick Nurse, the Toronto Raptors assistant coach, is going to join me in 14 minutes. That's why we're playing all Pearl Jam from the 10 album today, because they've won 10 wins in a row, paying homage, showing our respect for this really good Toronto Raptors team. And now all of a sudden, because of my previous conversation with Will Strickland joining me in studio, and Cleveland Cavaliers general manager David Griffin acknowledging that LeBron James doesn't have a no-trade clause, he can be traded. Got this conversation going here behind the scenes. What would it take? Okay, we're playing fantasy trade. And let me know at Wheeler TSN. And you can text me to 105050. The email's live at tsn1050.ca. David Griffin, the Cavaliers general manager, his phone rings. It's another general manager. What would it take to get Griffin to trade LeBron James? What would you have to offer up in order for the general manager of the Cavs to even contemplate trading LeBron James? Will Strickland says nobody. What if the Golden State Warriors called Steph Curry? Does that do it? Kevin Durant, does that pique your interest? Like, is there any deal that you would make? The answer might be nothing. I just simply don't trade LeBron James. Let me know. We're having some fun with this. Phillip saying the Spurs could call and offer Popovich and Kawhi Leonard, and that could be a deal. Let's put a lot of stock into what Popovich brings to the table. I guess his track record speaks for itself and a whole lot better than Tyronn Lue. But have your say at Wheeler TSN on Twitter. We'll have fun with this over the next hour of the program. Of course, it's NHL All-Star Festivities Media Day going on right now down in Nashville. This is like the appetizer. This is the pre-party, because my bachelor party, we're calling it Wheeler Palooza, is descending on Nashville come April. So this is just the warm-up act. So the NHL will roll in, they'll do their little parties, and the real party will be thrown in early April when me and my boys land in Nashville. But obviously, and this is a sad thing about this event, I know that the topic, and it's being thrown out there, and it's being talked about too much for my liking. The All-Star game doesn't mean anything, and the voting, and who's there, and who isn't there. It's all become so tiresome. Instead of a celebration of the game, it's turned into a nuisance. And that's the last thing that you want. And I've heard suggestions, people say, well, the NHL should just get rid of their All-Star game altogether. Imagine if you're the first league to just get rid of your All-Star game, to say, to heck with it, it doesn't matter. Now, certain leagues being pioneers, being trendsetters, that's a good thing. For example, the Oakland Raiders thinking about moving to Las Vegas, being the first team in, trumping the NHL, getting to Vegas first, that would be a big deal. And there's no better organization to do that than the Oakland Raiders. See, I would love that. But bailing out of an All-Star game, I don't know. I still think it serves a purpose. You might not be interested, but some people are. The local communities are. And for me, what I use it as, a chance to celebrate all that's great in each respective sport. You're trying to shine a light on the biggest and brightest stars and give them an opportunity to continue to market themselves, show a little personality, and have some fun. But that's not what's going on here. It's politicking. It's nasal gazing, and it's turned into an exercise where you've tinkered so much with the product that I don't even know what we're going to see this weekend. But the 3-on-3 game, like, that's nowhere even near the headline. Think about this. The All-Star game changed its format, and no one's talking about it, because everyone's talking about a guy who's buried in Newfoundland in John Scott. Like, the media scrum for John Scott today was far bigger, far more crazy than anything going on else going on in Nashville. And that's sad. That's really, really sad. I don't even think that John Scott's Players Tribune piece yesterday has much to do with it. I think it's just been the conversation, the build, and the lack of other storylines that people are chasing. You just turn to the biggest man in the room, John Scott. It's unfortunate, it's ugly, and it's casting a negative light on the entirety of the National Hockey League. And this isn't John Scott's fault. I, for one, was an individual originally that said, you know what, John, why are you going? You're really going to go through with this? I said this on air. I'm like, if I put myself in his shoes, I wouldn't have gone, because I'm like, I don't want to be made out to be the butt of all jokes. But he's turned from this guy who shouldn't be there into a sympathetic cause, into a sympathetic case. Like, you feel bad for the guy, the way that he tells the story that the NHL tried to get him out of the game. Like, that's quite clear. He made that quite clear. We knew that before. But then went to the level of asking the guy whether his kids would be proud of him if he showed up. Hitting out at the moral integrity, at the fiber of the individual, and his decision to play in an all-star game, for crying out loud, is disgusting. And I can't believe that someone employed by the National Hockey League would have the audacity to say that to another human being. And not only another human being, but someone that participates in their sport. He's part of the Brethren. He is one of them. And to bully and treat the guy that way, it's just horrible conduct by the National Hockey League. I was hoping today that names were going to be named, that we would find out whose asinine comment that was. We've heard none of it. The National Hockey League, they put on a smiley face, Gary Bettman saying, and he's more than welcome to be here. We're happy he's here. The fans spoke and we're happy to reflect their will. That is so BS. That is so Bettman. Bettman can never admit that he's wrong. He never has, never will. He's smug, he's arrogant, and that's the reason why people don't like him, because he's not relatable. It takes a certain kind of human being to step up and to admit that they're wrong. Gary Bettman, not that kind of guy. Slimy. That's what he is. Here's John Scott. Here's what he had to say about feeling welcomed in Nashville.
Now that I'm here, yeah, it's nice. They've been very welcoming. I sat down with Gary and we had a little quick chat. And he was good. He said, you know, we're happy to have you here. We're going to have a good time and make the best of it and just, you know, have fun in Nashville.
Sure, Gary was. Do you know what made it special? Guys like Brent Burns and Joe Pavelski and the brothers, like, stepping up and spending some time with him, having some beers and celebrating the game of hockey. That's what's made it worthwhile. But good on John Scott for putting on a brave face. So that's the big story today. Maybe we'll play the clip from Steven Stamkos. He made a comment about how his contract negotiations are going and how the process is affected or not affected his play on the ice.
Yeah, well, it's obviously something that I've never dealt with before, especially at this time of the year. It's not something I knew exactly how long this process was going to take, but you learn it is a process, and that's kind of the key word that I've been trying to tell everyone, and the lines of communication have been open the whole time, and that's where it is right now. But with regards to distractions, obviously you're human, you're going to think about those things, but I try not to bring it into the room. I try not to, you leave it at home. You come to the rink, that's kind of the safe zone. The guys know they're in your corner. They're there supporting you, and guys have gone through that in the past, and it's been pretty easy to kind of block out once you get to the rink for me.
So nothing exceptionally newsy there, other than the fact that Steven Stamkos addressed it when asked by the media earlier today. We do have Toronto Marlies hockey for you tonight on this station. It's the Toronto Marlies and the Grand Rapids Griffins going tonight at 7 p.m. Right here on the station. William Nylander makes his return to the Toronto Marlies tonight. Great news for Maple Leafs fans, Marlies fans alike. And we all just believed he's been recovering from concussion-like symptoms. That was the case, but that's not the only reason why he's missed now more than a month of hockey action. He was in conversation with Todd Crocker, the voice of the Toronto Marlies on Leafs TV, and you'll hear Todd tonight right here on TSN 1050. They were in conversation, and William Nylander dropped this piece of gold.
I mean, I went through concussion protocol, and that went through, by pretty quickly. And then once I started to get back on the ice, was on the ice for a week, I basically came back on one day after practice and had appendicitis. So then I was out for a couple of days. They gave me antibiotics and stuff, so it's been a little of a delay with the return, but now I'm back and ready to go.
So William Nylander had appendicitis. Look at that. I didn't hear that from any hockey insider, any Maple Leafs beat reporter. I didn't hear that from anyone. And I don't bring that up to say that those people aren't doing their job. This is saying how much this organization has everything on lockdown. It is on complete lockdown. Lou Lamoriello is going to join Brian Hayes and Bill Hayes at 5:05 today. He's probably going to give them nothing. Like, not good luck, Brian and Bill, trying to get the man to say anything. If people in this city didn't know that William Nylander had appendicitis, then what's going to be told? This is the biggest difference between this team, this organization, this year and previous years. Loose lips have gone away. Tight. It is on lockdown right now. Nylander, appendicitis. Who knew? Not I. And I'm around the team. I do the Leafs game day skate. I had no clue. So there's that. William Nylander tonight. You can listen to it right here on TSN 1050. We continue to celebrate the Raptors winning 10 in a row. Raptors assistant coach Nick Nurse will join the program next, give you a sense of the vibe behind the scenes and how close they are to competing with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're continuing to play songs from Pearl Jam's 10 as we celebrate 10 wins for the Toronto Raptors. 10 wins in a row right here on TSN 1050. Gareth Wheeler with you. The weekend is nigh, Toronto. You can hit me up at WheelerTSN on Twitter. For you soccer fans out there, Manchester United leads Derby County in the FA Cup, 23rd minute. Wayne Rooney scores a goal. It's Manchester United 1, Derby County no score. But we're going to continue on with the basketball talk. The Raptors defeated the New York Knicks. It wasn't always pretty last night, but effective. And yet another W. The Raptors are the hottest team in the NBA. 103-93 was the final, as the Raptors continuing to put all kinds of pressure on the Cleveland Cavaliers atop the Eastern Conference. DeMar DeRozan, he was named an all-star. Life is good with the Raptors and the Raptors organization. Raptors 905 have won 5 games in a row. The Raptors have won 10 in a row. This whole New Year's resolution not to lose basketball games off to a good start for the Raptors organization. Pleased to welcome assistant coach with the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse, to join us here on the program. It's a pleasure to have you, Nick. Now, did you see a win streak, anything like this coming in recent weeks or months leading to this 10-game win streak?
I don't know if you ever see a 10-game winning streak coming, but you did see that we were playing pretty good, and we had this homestand coming and a game every other day for 14 days. And, you know, I kind of mentioned, hey, let's get hot, you know, to Case a couple times. I'm like, Case, this is when we're playing pretty good, man. Let's just click these games off. And it's kind of what's happened. It's been great.
Now, with the players, I know the word confidence is always thrown out there. Is that what you believe is happening here? Is that the team's now trusting one another, and some of the players, particularly off the bench, they just seem to be in the groove right now?
I think you're right. I think the simple way to look at it is I think our guys are just getting better. You know, I think Valanciunas is a better player this year. I think Terrence Ross is a better player. Pat Patterson, even Kyle and DeMar are playing better than ever. So, you know, it doesn't stop there. Corey Joseph addition, Biz addition. I think JJ has done an admirable job, just filling in for Damari Carroll. So, confidence is good, but I think the real short answer is individually our guys are improving and collectively buying into what we're doing as a coaching staff.
Nick, you've been a part of coaching staffs for very good teams overseas and championship teams in the D-League as well. Is there a similar trait or characteristic that these winning teams share?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, the belief, you know, you've already touched on it, the belief that you can figure out a way to win. I always say in the NBA or in professional basketball, there's a million ways to win a game. Mm-hmm. You know, there really is a lot of different ways to win. And we've kind of done that during this stretch. We've won high scoring. We've won low scoring. We've won when we have shot it well, not shot it well, you know, whatever. We've kind of figured it out. And that kind of, all those things are necessary to keep a streak going. But that's what's fun about a streak too, is now you shouldn't catch yourself off guard too much. You know, when you got this streak, you know, we want to go into the next game, no matter who the opponent is, try to keep this thing going. And that's a huge motivating factor in professional basketball and in the NBA.
Assistant coach with the Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse, joining us here on TSN 1050. I am Gareth Wheeler. So you're the hottest team in the NBA, but we all know that an 82-game sched is an absolute marathon. So what do you do to try to maintain this style or this level of play to a certain degree? I mean, do you start looking at other teams like the Clevelands and the San Antonios and the Golden States of the world and start challenging yourself internally?
Well, I don't know if we get too caught up in what other teams are doing. I think the main thing is you can't get too happy on the farm. You know, you still got to analyze wins and the mistakes you're making. You still got to look at your areas for improvement, and you got to be critical about it. You know, you've got to. It's easy to kind of brush it off. Everything's okay. We're winning, and that would be a mistake. You know, you gotta. The goal is to be playing great in April, May, and June, really, you know, in this league. And you've got to do that. You've got to put in a daily effort, first of all, on the defensive end. You know, if you want to be a great defensive team, it takes a daily commitment. And then, again, the rest of it, the offense, let's tighten up our execution. Let's share the ball more. Let's be really good in our special situations offensively, et cetera. So I think you know, you just don't want to get too fat and happy. You got to keep striving to get better and better, you know?
Well, yeah. You got to learn how to walk before you learn how to run. And it's almost like this team, since you've been here, has been doing just that. And the conversation, and you hear Charles Barkley on last night's broadcast. You were busy working, Nick, but a lot of us were watching at home. Him saying that the Raptors are one of the top five teams in the NBA. And when you hear things like that, are you able to shut out the outside noise and maintain the internal focus that you're striving for?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's certainly, you know, you can't be afraid or surprised or any of that stuff. I mean, that's where we want to go, mm-hmm. you know, and if you want to go there, you're going to get this external pressure. You're going to get, you know, all these comments you got to be able to handle. You're going to get accolades. You're going to get everybody patting you on the back. And the key, in my opinion, is you don't let that stuff soften you up. You know, you go out every night and you prove it. And to me, that's what we are trying to focus on. We're trying to go out every night and set a tone defensively, first of all. You know, become our identity. Defense first, move the ball on offense. And every time we go out, no matter who we're playing, we get the opportunity to improve both of those things. And if we do that, we can legitimately, you know, climb into that top five NBA team status, but we're not there yet. We got to keep working towards it.
I continue to say this on the radio, Nick, that the even more impressive than what you've actually put together this season through a difficult start to the season with a lot of road games. Valanciunas was out for a long stretch of time, and Damari Carroll remains out for this ball club. Has it reached a point where you and the coaching staff and the people around you within the organization are starting to say, you know what, the sky's the limit for this team? No point of just limiting ourselves to maybe a first-round playoff win. Let's see how far this thing can go.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you gotta do that. But you know, I think you got to be realistic as well. I think, you know, somebody's got to, you know, you would say Cleveland's the prohibitive favorite in the East, right? Somebody's mm-hmm. got to play them in the Eastern Conference Finals. Somebody's got to play them. So you know, we might as well throw our name in that hat to be that team, right? I mean, that should be our goal to keep going as far as we can. But on the other hand, we realize that, you know, the Bulls are pretty good. The Hawks are pretty good. You know, even the Knicks when healthy and Miami when healthy. And we all know when Washington gets right, how good they can become. So, mm-hmm. You know, there's not like we're, you know, there's a million miles separating us from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 in the Eastern Conference. So that's why it's important that we just kind of worry about ourselves again, worry about, improving, worrying about our toughness, being ready to go each and every night, being able to handle situations, games when they take Kyle out, DeMar out, whatever they're trying to do, we need to be able to handle, you know, every and all scenario. And we still got, you know what, 35 games or so to continue to improve.
Nick Nurse here on TSN 1050. And that's kind of my approach to this team. It's oftentimes in this city, we look at other markets and say, well, what about them? I think the situation right now and where I would like to see the conversation go is, what about us? This team has two All-Stars this year. You have other players who've stepped up and emerged. So I look at Cleveland, Nick, and I say, yeah, they're a really good team, but why not the Toronto Raptors? And I just look at this team and I wonder what you internally believe needs to be improved upon for this team to take the next step, whatever that may be.
Well, again, I think we've built a pretty good foundation on both sides of the ball. Okay, we're creeping into being a top, you know, 7 or 8 team on both sides of the ball. I don't know exactly. I think we're top 5 offense and maybe 7 defense or something like that, which is pretty good. Our point differential, our winning margins, you know, right up there, in the top 3 or 4 as well. Again, it's making sure that we're building habits on defense. It's making sure that our focus is there. You know, again, there's a lot of possessions in a game, and you like to, as a coach, say, you know, each and every possession we're trying to do that, but what you're trying to really do is do that for more and more possessions each game. You know, you're a long ways away from guarding the way you want to guard each and every possession in a game, so you just keep creeping that number up to, you know, we're really happy with how we guarded that possession. That's where it all starts. And then again, at the other end, for me, if we just move the ball, I mean, we're hard to guard, and we're an attacking style team. We've got more weapons, I think, than ever. People would have said that, you know, we lost a lot of offense in the off season, but I think we got more than ever with the way Terrence is playing. Corey Joseph has been a surprise the way he can attack and get to the rim. I think for everybody, Pat's now in a groove shooting the ball. Luis Scola has spread the floor for us. You know, again, not a million points a game, but just the threat of the way he spread the floor has opened things up for some of the other guys. And I think Jonas's play has improved at the offensive end. So, the offensive execution and ball movement just need to get better and better. And I think our guys are starting to realize that ball movement's important.
There's no letdown. And the thing that I love about watching this group is that they personify the word team. But in every team, there's going to be stars. And there's two All-Stars on this Raptors team. We tipped our cap to Kyle Lowry last week, but it was DeMar's turn last night, named to his second All-Star game. You've been here for a couple years now, Nick. Maybe you could just speak to his progression, what you've seen internally, and how that's translated to some spectacular play on the court.
Yeah, he's been really impressive. And here's what I would say. I would say, like, starting late last year after he came back from the injury, I thought he became a much better passer. He's starting to get the ball into the paint, get up in the air, and snap it out to shooters. And that is, you know, to me, you know, when I first got here 3 years ago, he was a little bit tunnel visioned on get, you know, his own shot and ISO play and et cetera. So I think he started improving his willingness to give it up, his ability to get it up, and his vision to see what to make the right play. And he's always been criticized a little bit for being an inefficient player, meaning he takes a lot of long range 2-point shots. He does draw a large number of shooting fouls, which makes him an efficient player. But now he's even become more efficient lately here in these last 20 games or so. He's getting to the rim. He's starting to make 3-pointers. He had a game where he made 4 3-pointers in one game, and I would think everybody would think that was unheard of for DeMar. He hasn't been the greatest 3-point shooter in the world, but he's getting there now to where he's catching and shooting, and he's, you know, his percentage still down 32-33%, but it's coming up quickly. You know, he's really taking it up. And to me, if he makes himself a passer, an efficient player by the shots he takes, and he still is kind of a big-time closer, you know, late in the game bucket maker, man, he's really something.
Well said. I want to end on this note because we often see the tight rotation of 9 or 10 out there on the court on a regular basis at the ACC. But what's great to see is down the road at the Hershey Center, I see you and a number of the players there on a regular basis supporting what's going on with Raptors 905. And I know that D-League is near and dear to your heart. It's kind of where you grew up as a head coach, or a part of your growing up as a head coach, Nick, or as assistant coach. Head coach, I just wonder what you see from these Raptors young players and the way that they're developing and how much of an advantage that has been for them having the D-League team right here in our own backyard.
Yeah, you know, first of all, as you know, I mean, I love it. I love, you know, everything about it. I spent 6 years in the D-League and coached a lot of guys that are now playing in the NBA through that system. So it is a great help. I mean, to me, you're only getting better if you're on the floor, you know, playing in games. And it's a great job by Masai and MLSE and Mr. Tannenbaum, everybody, to get this thing set up. You know, I've been out there as many times as I could. It's only been about two or three because of our schedule, but it's great for those guys. And I think we saw Lucas go down, come back and help us. We've seen Norm come back and help us. We get to evaluate some of the other guys they have. I like the way they're playing. Coach Mermis is, you know, he's really doing everything we're doing. So it's a seamless transition back and forth for those guys to just, you know, jump in the car, go out there, play, and they know what's going on because it's you know, Raptors system we're running. It's great to see them have some success now. I think they've won 5 in a row, which they deserve, because I think they've been a little unlucky, to be honest, for as well as they've played. And it's great to see them get on a winning trek as well.
Awesome. All kinds of victories for this organization over the course of this season. Another win for the community today as the Raptors players and coaches will be heading to Sick Kids a little bit later on today. I keep up the great work, Nick. The city is really galvanized, all completely behind you boys and what's going on right now. So it's been a lot of fun to watch. Thank you so much for joining us, and hope we can catch up again down the road.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Raptors assistant coach Nick Nurse joining us here on TSN 1050. Very gracious with his time, coming off 10 straight wins for the franchise. Casey Curtis, the former coach of Milos Raonic, after a disappointing finish to his semifinal match at the Australian Open, the wee hours of the morning. Tickets yesterday, struck out with Pearl Jam tickets today. I don't generally like to make this show all about myself, but if you're listening out there and you can hook a brother up at Wheeler TSN on Twitter is where you find me, I will be eternally grateful. Gareth Wheeler with you. It's 3:36 here on TSN 1050. Exactly 12 hours ago, I was up with much of this country rooting, cheering, and watching, and really on the edge of our seats for every shot taken by Milos Raonic in the semifinal of the Australian Open. He was facing Andy Murray, won a set up. Murray bounced back by taking the second set. Then Milos in the third set won that. And then all of a sudden, this right adductor issue in his hip groin area acted up on him. He saw a trainer a couple times, and you could tell it affected the way that he played. And there was a little bit of a sense of desperation in the way that he played from that point on. He maybe was taking a little bit more chances. He lost some speed velocity on his serve as well, and ended up falling in crushing fashion in 5 sets to Andy Murray. But Milos did this country proud over the past 2 weeks. Even before that, winning the tournament in Brisbane, defeating Roger Federer. This is some of the finest tennis that we've seen Milos Raonic ever play. A man that knows Milos a lot better than I do, and I know him a little bit, but this guy knows him very well. It's a former coach of Milos Raonic. Casey Curtis coached Milos from the age of 8 through his teenage years, and he joins us here on TSN 1050. What were your emotions while watching last night, and where are you now, Casey?
Hi, guys. Well, right now I'm at the club that I work at, Mayfair Parkway, and just working out with some juniors here in the clinic this afternoon. But yeah, I was excited along with the rest of the country, and sad, obviously, at the end of the match. But boy, he's playing great tennis right now, so we've got a lot of good things to look forward to.
What was the biggest difference in Milos being able to go out there and beat some real stiff competition like Stan Wawrinka, Gael Monfils, and getting so deep into a match where, when I was watching, Casey, and correct me if I was wrong, like, Milos had Andy. Like, he was the better player, and if it wasn't for that adductor issue, we could be telling a very different story right now.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I was quite confident after that tiebreaker, and going into the fourth set, I felt for sure Milos was going to win the match, and I think I even saw it in Andy's eyes. You know, it looked like he was starting to resign himself a little bit that way, and it's his backhand has really, really improved a lot. He's starting to drive his backhand more. He used to, with Galablanco, his old coach, he was kind of looping his backhand more and sitting further behind the baseline, and now he stepped up a little bit closer on the baseline, and he's driving his back, and he's starting to hit it a little bit more like his forehand. It's not quite there yet. I'm sure you'll see it get a lot better. And then he's going to the net, and his volley has really improved again because he's starting to do it. I mean, he wasn't volleying there for quite a few years, so it gets a little bit rusty. But he's looking pretty sharp around the net. You know, he's finding ways to sneak in and take advantage of his big ground stroke, and especially that big forehand that he's got. So, you know, the serve is still there pretty good. I think his serve isn't quite as good as it has been in the past, but
really?
I'm sure he'll get it back.
Really? Why, yeah. Why is that, Casey?
Well, they've been sort of experimenting, I think, a little bit, trying to – I know that Ivan Ljubicic's old coach was trying to get him to go a bit higher, believe it or not, to get his contact point higher, maybe to create some more angles, but which I personally thought might have been a little bit of a mistake. I you know, the guy had such a great rhythm going. I don't think you mess around too much with that, but I see that it looks to me like he's starting to get back to his old rhythm, and hopefully we'll see him serving a little bit better, and still like to see him put a little more pace on that second serve.
Pro tennis coach and former coach of Milos Raonic, Casey Curtis, joining us here on TSN 1050. I am Gareth Wheeler. You mentioned that about his serve. Me just being a tennis fan, maybe not a professional like you, Casey, it just seems like he is such a more complete game right now. At times, he looked limited in his return game. His serve was again on point, but the ability to stay in and be involved in extending rallies and that ability to get to the net really seems like it can be a true difference maker in his game, helping him turn the corner here at the age of 25.
Right. I've wanted him to go to the net for years now, so it's really, really great for me to see him go into the net. I think he's going to start to win a lot more points. And you know, I'm not sure you're going to see the accuracy on the ground strokes that you see when a guy's on the baseline. There's not really that much pressure on the other player. Pretty much can hit it anywhere in the court as long as he hits it firm and deep. But when there's a good volley or a great volley at the net at 6'5" with a huge wingspan, you know, your area that you can hit a passing shot is much more limited. So you raise the bar on the guy and you make him come up with a much better shot. So looking forward to seeing a lot more net play from Milos.
Sure. I love what Milos is all about. I thought he showed the genuine, authentic young man that he is to the world over the course of this tournament. Not only the comments about those who lost their lives in Saskatchewan, but he was jovial. He kind of joked with the crowd, yet he was composed on the court. Just the way that he conducted himself really won over a lot of tennis fans. I firmly believe that. But when I watch his game, he does still seem limited in certain ways, and I don't know how much that will hold him back, Casey. Like, he's just not as smooth as a Federer or a Djokovic or some of the other top players. Could that hold him back, or do you look at things a different way?
Well, no, you're right in terms of I don't think you're ever going to see him moving around like a Federer or a Djokovic. He's built differently. You know, he's quite a bit taller than they are. He's got very long legs, and so that for sure that's going to limit his movement, but his movement is continuing to improve, and I think it will continue. And, you know, if he's coming to the net, it's not going to limit him as much as if he's trying to stay on the baseline and get into these long rallies, which I don't think is a real great idea. Milos has well above average pace on his shots, mm-hmm. And so that's really what he wants to use. He wants to use his assets there.
Okay, Casey, so what's next? Like, what's a reasonable expectation to where Milos can take his game? Like, is he someone that can go on and compete with the likes of the Djokovics and the Murrays of the world on a regular basis? Or is he kind of in that next tier, and can he get into the top tier? Like, where can we expect Milos to go?
Well, you know, I think you and I both thought he was going to beat Andy today, and he's beaten Stan, and he beat Roger, so I actually think that he's one of the only guys, maybe the only guy, who could actually give Djokovic a real hard time because of the pace on his ball. You know, you don't go around Novak. You've got to go through him, and you've got to do it with pace. And Milos has that kind of pace. I was really looking forward to seeing that final, but we'll have to wait a little bit longer. But I'm pretty sure he's going to be up there in the top two or three fairly quickly.
Yeah, the only unfortunate thing is that a lot of Canada may not have seen just how good Milos was over the course of this tournament, with the matches predominantly being played in the middle of the night. But as someone who's operating off a lack of sleep today, I can tell you he was and has been just that good. Casey, really appreciate you taking some time. I'll remind our listeners, give you a follow on Twitter at @KCCTennis, and hopefully we can catch up with the continued success of Milos Raonic as we move forward.
I'll look forward to that. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Casey. Pro tennis coach and former coach of Milos Raonic, Casey Curtis, joining us here on TSN 1050. The women's and men's finals will go tonight at 3 in the morning and tomorrow at 3 in the morning, respectively. Kerber versus Williams and Murray versus Djokovic. You can catch that and a complete coverage on Canada's sports leader. But shout out to Milos for doing this country proud. We'll wrap things up in... How is Dennis Wyman not suspended already? Like, this story is just going to linger over. Like, he's been suspended indefinitely, but there's no firm number on what he's received. Like, don't you just need to give him a number before the All-Star game is played this weekend? It's going to kind of let it linger. Maybe we'll have that discussion next, and we'll tee up the All-Star festivities for the rest of the weekend. What Leo Komarov will be competing in on All-Star Saturday night. Okay, we just got a couple moments left, and it's the Hazes, Brian and Bill, taking you through 4-7 on TSN 5. Lou Lamoriello guesting at 5:05, the Maple Leafs general manager. I wonder if he's going to reveal his state secrets, how he kept the fact that William Nylander had appendicitis under wraps. No one knew. William Nylander will play tonight for the Toronto Marlies right here on TSN 1050 as they take on the Grand Rapids Griffins. We're playing this because the Carolina Panthers, it's still got a week until the Super Bowl. They're hoping that Drake, noted bandwagon jumper Drake, hops on their bandwagon because this song, Big Rings, Drake and Future, like this is their song. Jonathan Stewart posted a video of the team celebrating to this song. Cam Newton's been celebrating. But no love from Drake as of yet. Drake likes any front runner. So what's the deal? Why doesn't he like the Carolina Panthers? Like, it's the one bad thing I can say about Drake. Noted front runner Drake. We'll see. I think whichever team he jumps aboard with on the Super Bowl, I'll bet on the other team. I guarantee that. I got to ask Mulls and Steph behind the glass. This is what happened to me yesterday. I meant to bring this up. So I'm at Francesco's across the street trying to order a vegetarian sandwich, but it's like a deli counter, right?
Yes.
And there's no distinct line. I've only been in there a handful of times, so I don't know the protocol. But I'm quite clearly the next person in line. This dude saddles up and starts a line to the side. So I'm looking at him. I'm saying, okay, clearly I missed that, but he's got to let me go, right? No, he stepped in front and went before me, noting that I was there first. Was it my bad because I don't know line protocol in this place, or his bad because he cut me off, knowing that I got there first and not letting me to roll?
I feel like, was he an Italian man?
Because
Francesco's is an Italian
was.
Bakery. He might have been a regular, because you don't do that unless you're staking some, unless you feel some sort of claim
sure.
to that restaurant and to the behind-the-counter people. You can't pull that. I did that the other day accidentally at Pusateri's.
Right.
I didn't realize there was a number system, because usually when there's no line, they have the numbers.
Right.
And I butted in front of like three people and just blurted out my order. Did I ever get the death stares? And I had no clue until I saw someone pull the number.
If you don't go in the place regularly, how are you supposed to know?
I know.
Because another guy, I went up to pay, And apparently I didn't know line protocol there either. And someone hopped me in line too.
Yeah.
I was like, this place is like mayhem.
And I don't know if you went at lunchtime, but it is insane.
Crazy.
I'm surprised you got there before our show started at 2.
Warning, if you go there, know the line protocol. Good stuff.
You'll have to get him back.
I'll remind our listeners, if you want to get my pro line picks on Twitter, I have a Saturday 3-pack of soccer coming your way. Hit us up at TSN 1050 Radio. Get way into the game with pro line and proline.ca. The Hayses are next. Enjoy your weekend, Toronto. This has been The Hay Show, TSN 1050.